How do we defend children's rights? Well, there's one very simple but hard answer to that. And it is that adults need to do hard things.
Katie Faust of Them Before Us, speaking at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Too often, we expect children to do the hard things in marriage and family situations. What about when adults are facing a struggling marriage? If the adults decide, we just can't work this out, what they're really saying is, this cross is too heavy for me. Here, kids, you take it instead.
You can watch and listen to a recording of Katie Faust's presentation, Making the Case for Children's Rights, from this year's Making the Case Conference. For a tax-deductible donation of $250, you can download an audio and video recording. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Today it is my honor to nominate one of our nation's most brilliant and gifted legal minds to the Supreme Court. She is a woman of unparalleled achievement, towering intellect, sterling credentials, and unyielding loyalty to the Constitution, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
I fully understand that this is a momentous decision for a president. And if the Senate does me the honor of confirming me, I pledge to discharge the responsibilities of this job to the very best of my ability. I love the United States, and I love the United States Constitution. I am truly humbled by the prospect of serving on the Supreme Court.
That's President Donald Trump and his nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, speaking Saturday in a Rose Garden ceremony. The nomination was no real surprise. It was telegraphed beforehand, and she had obviously been in the spotlight previously for a confirmation to a lower court. But how would Amy Coney Barrett change the complexion of the Supreme Court? What is her judicial philosophy? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, September the 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about the nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court. Margot Cleveland, an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School, will be our guest for the first few minutes. Pastor Peter Bender joins us to begin a series on the theology and practice of a Lutheran day school. He's director of the Concordia Catechetical Academy. And then on this Monday, we're going to go through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line, that email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court, Margot Cleveland. She's an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School, served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge. She's adjunct instructor for the College of Business at Notre Dame, and she's senior contributor for The Federalist. Margot, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Todd.
Judge Amy Coney Barrett and you have similar legal backgrounds. Tell us about them.
Sure. So Amy Coney Barrett, the Seventh Circuit judge, and I both are graduates of the Notre Dame Law School, which is quite a proud achievement now, given that she has been nominated to the Supreme Court. She has been on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. I think she's going on her third year. And I had kind of a different professional route. I actually was a career law clerk on the Seventh Circuit. So I served as a lawyer for a judge with whom she is now on the Seventh Circuit.
Both of you also, I believe, are recipients of a rather high honor from Notre Dame Law School. What is that?
Sure. It was the Hoynes Award, which is a award that is bestowed on the top graduating law student in the view of the faculty member of the school. And I'm kind of chuckling because I was joking with my husband. You know, it's funny, we both received the same award, and he kind of quipped back, "What happened to you?" And of course, I came back with, "Well, I married you." So we were having a little bit of fun with that, but you know, it was quite an honor.
What do you think about the prospect of having a Supreme Court justice who isn't an Ivy League law school grad?
No, I think that's intriguing because until I started hearing just some of the talking heads pointing that out, I wouldn't have really thought about it, because the Notre Dame Law School gives such a wonderful experience that I, in some ways, I think is probably broader than the Ivy League, because it also builds on the Catholic legal theory, which really is natural law, which is what our country was founded on. So you don't have kind of this strange idea, what's this natural law? It's part of what the curriculum is. It gives us, a more rounded view of the law, and something, especially when you look at the foundational principles of our country, that you have the different philosophers are pulling that into the Constitution. I think it's going to be exciting to have someone who is outside of the Ivy League on the court. And I think it's just going to bode for more of that in the future.
What can you tell us about Judge Barrett's legal philosophy?
She's made pretty clear that she is an originalist, which for all those who are bemoaning her confirmation as being some sort of extremist, they should stop and think about what an originalist actually is. It's someone who doesn't believe that the judge is the one who should decide what the law is or says in from a personal perspective, but what did the founding fathers say that the law was, and how was that understood at the time? What did the legislative branch say that it was? So for anyone who is concerned that Judge Amy Coney Barrett or another judge would be imposing their personal views, knowing that they're an originalist should make them realize that is not the case. That is completely antithetical to someone who holds that judicial philosophy.
Do any certain cases in her legal career or rulings stand out to you?
I haven't followed a lot of her rulings, but one of the things that I've dug into recently were two abortion cases, which I've seen the kind of abortion apologists come out and say, look, she's already ruled against abortion rights and abortion restrictions. So I dug into those cases to find out what she did. And of course, what I found out is that the left is lying. And the two cases were both Planned Parenthood cases that challenged portions of Indiana's law restricting abortions in certain circumstances. And she actually was not on those cases. What happened was a judge on the court asked for an en banc vote to ask all the judges, should we reconsider this as an entire court? And several judges, in both cases said, yes, let's reconsider this as a court. And what struck me there was in neither of those cases did Judge Coney Barrett write separately. She didn't feel that she had an obligation to stake out a principle and stake out a point. Her vote was, yes, I think this is something that the full court should reconsider. And in one of them, she joined on with Judge Kaney, who had said, look, this is a big issue, not in the abortion context, but we're telling a state it put its law into effect. And we don't even know what the effect would be because we're doing this pre-enforcement. And that is a great concern from the perspective of federalism and the limits of a federal court's power. And she signed on to his comments. So a couple kind of takeaways here are, she was not ruling on the merits of these restrictions. And what she did was say we should reconsider this and look at these bigger issues. Again, this should give people some sense of calm that she's not saying, I want to impose my will. It's actually the opposite. The Indiana legislature had passed laws, and in the dissent saying we should reconsider this is saying, this is something that we should be cautious as judges to do. It was also interesting because those cases, the abortion lobby has been saying, oh, look, they're overturning these restrictions. The restrictions that were involved were parental notification, prohibiting sex-based abortions, and disposing of fetal remains. So things that, you know, moderate America actually supports. But of course, you can't talk about that because then the curtain's pulled back from what the abortion movement wants in this country, which is there can be no restrictions, not even the most moderate restrictions.
There have been negative reports about Judge Coney Barrett's affiliation with a group called People of Praise. What can you tell us about that?
I lived in South Bend for years. I used to teach full time at the university before marrying and moving to raise a family. And anyone from South Bend would know that People of Praise is just a religious organization. The press is making it sound as if it's some handmade tail wacko group of people, and it's not. And the other part that I know People of Praise from is that they run a traditional classical school called Trinity there, which has the reputation of having the absolutely best reputation for educational opportunities. So it just is so funny to see people trying to make her association with a group of Christians of all denominations as something evil. And in fact, it shows that she's not some sort of rabid Catholic. She is in this Christian organization with Christians of other denominations where they are sharing their faith in Jesus together.
Do you expect Judge Barrett's religious faith to be an issue in the confirmation hearings?
I think that it will be brought up, but I think that they realized after last time with Senator Feinstein's "the dogma lives loudly within you," it's going to backfire if they push it too hard. And really, there's nothing that is extreme in the background, unless you consider actually believing the faith that you belong to extreme. So I do think it will be brought up, but I think that it will be done much more by innuendo.
Since she is a woman being nominated to the court, will feminist leaders support her confirmation?
Only if they're feminists in the truest sense of the word, of valuing female and female uniqueness and seeing us as equal in the eyes of God. But you're already seeing that feminists who normally would scream if anyone questioned how women can raise children and have a career, saying, how could she possibly have seven children and do this? How could she possibly give them any attention? So unfortunately, no, you have to be the right kind of, quote, feminist in order to get that support.
How do you respond to those who say that President Trump is, quote, forcing the Barrett nomination and confirmation through at this time?
Well, there's a vacancy, and it is the president's constitutional obligation and right to nominate a justice. And that is what he's doing, and it's the Senate's obligation to give advice and consent to that nomination. And frankly, after what was done to Kavanaugh, I'm not going to listen to any complaints. Everything up to Kavanaugh, it was politics and power, but at least you had an even playing field that people could use and exert whatever political power they had. But when you got to Kavanaugh, they put ideology above truth. And if you as a senator were willing to put someone in front of the nation, in front of the Senate, to falsely accuse someone of misconduct in order to prevent the nomination, then you have no grounds to criticize the appropriate, powerful appointment of someone at this point.
Speaking of Kavanaugh, do you expect the confirmation hearings to be as contentious as those notorious ones have become?
I don't. And there are two reasons. One, that you have a woman where you're not going to be able to have these types of false allegations made. And two, the backlash was pretty strong. They ended up losing Senate seats. And the senators, I think, are aware of that. I think that they are going to focus on process and try to make this about it's too late, you shouldn't be appointing someone, as opposed to personal, because this is a woman who has an incredible background and, from what everyone says, is just an incredible human being besides being an incredible jurist, that attacking her is not going to go anywhere.
Finally, how would Judge Barrett's confirmation to the Supreme Court change the court?
I think that's something we're just going to have to wait to see. I think that the more originalists on the court, the better we are as a country, because you see what the proper role of the judiciary is. You see that the proper role is not exerting their personal opinions and pushing the law in a direction that they believe is the right direction. You have more deference to the legislative branch, and that gives the populace an opportunity to have more input on what the laws are. So I think in the long run, it benefits the country when they see that you can have originalists disagreeing and having these debates on what the Constitution meant, what the statute means. And I think it's interesting that you never see the kind of split where the left judges go to the right. And that's because it's all about policy for them. And when you're looking at interpreting the law, the originalists can say sometimes, you know, reasonable people can disagree, and that's what they should be doing. So I think it's too early to say. I think that most people are saying, oh, it's going to change this line of cases and that line of cases. Really, what I'm hopeful is it's going to change the outlook of what a judge or a justice's obligation is, what their duty is, and maybe an education of the public of that.
Margot Cleveland is an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge, adjunct instructor for the College of Business at Notre Dame, and senior contributor to The Federalist. You can read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Margot, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Pastor Peter Bender joins us on the other side of the break. We're going to begin a series with him on the theology and practice of a Lutheran day school. We'll be asking questions like, what is the church and what is a Lutheran day school? Basic questions right after this. You could own an on-air light from the Old Issues Etc. studio. We're conducting a silent auction. Proceeds go toward the new studios of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever. You can place your bid for an on-air studio light by sending an email to lynn@issuesetc.org or by calling 618-223-8385. We'll announce the highest bid on Wednesday, September 30th, and the winner on Friday, October 2nd.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is, lcmschaps@lcms.org.